I think last time we had 18, so not
Yeah,
that.
we got 10 attendees and me a couple of times, so.
Well, we'll be starting with the reading the biography anyway, so gives time for people to show up. So, hello everyone. Welcome to this 102nd webinar on the Secret Doctrine. We'll start with our reading from HPB, The Extraordinary Life and Influence of Helen Blavatsky. So let's get, whoop. There we go. So if we could get a reader, please.
I'll start off. After her departure from Russia, HPB's life is not easy to document. She kept no diary, and her relatives were not standing by to report her doings. Nadia writes, "For the first 8 years, she gave her mother's family no sign of life for fear of being traced by her legitimate lord and master. As to her father, he alone knew of her whereabouts. Knowing, however, that he would never prevail upon her to return to Nikifor, he acquiesced in her absence and supplied her with money whenever she came to places where it could safely reach her
Nikifor was her husband that she's
husband."
running away from, basically.
Yeah. HPB's critics find it difficult to believe that a woman in those days could safely travel to the places she claimed to have visited. Privately, she wrote the following to a Senate woman when he, oh, to Senate when he was preparing her memoirs. "Suppose I was to tell you that in India I was in man's clothes, for I was very thin then, which is the solemn truth. And what would people say? So I was in Egypt with the old Countess Kisilev, who liked to see me dressed as a gentleman student," he said. "Now you understand my difficulties? That which would pass elsewhere, save in the prudish West, as an eccentricity, oddity, would serve now only to incriminate me."
Okay, and next.
Ben, can you read that for us, please?
In Cairo, HPB met Dr. Albert Leighton Rawson, then a young art student from the United States. As he also saw her 2 or 3 years later in New York, and again in that city in the 1870s, he is an important witness to some of her journeyings. Rawson described his meeting with HPB in Cairo in an article written after her death. She revealed to him that she was engaged in a work that would someday free mankind from mental bondage. He commented that her disinterestedness in her mission was sublime, for he frequently said, "This work is not mine, but his that sent me." Book of John 7:16. HPB's travels in the Middle East proved disappointing. She wrote Prince Dondukov at Athens in Egypt on the Euphrates. "Everywhere I went, I sought my philosopher's stone. I have lived with the whirling dervishes, with the Druzes of Mount Lebanon, with the Bedouin Arabs, and the marabouts of Damascus. I found it nowhere. I learned necromancy and astrology, crystal gazing and spiritualism. Of Red Virgin, no trace whatsoever." After this, as HPB mentioned later to a French correspondent, she traveled with her father in Europe. This may be the time she went with him to London.
Thank you, Ben. And by the way, the Red Virgin is an alchemical term. It's the one of the processes of that symbolize Union with the Soul. Okay, well, we began our last session with HPB's short, maybe the shortest of all, commentaries on the B section of stanza 7, verse 4, which begins with a passage in poetic prose. I won't reread this because we're going to be getting to it in just a minute anyway in our summary. And this prose reads, "Just as myriads of bright sparks dance on the waters of an ocean above which one and the same moon is shining, so our evanescent personalities, the elusive envelopes of the immortal monad ego, twinkle and dance on the waves of Maya. They last and appear as the thousands of sparks produced by the moonbeams, only so long as the queen of the night radiates her luster on the running waters of life, the periods of Manvantara, and then they disappear. The beams, symbols of our eternal spiritual egos, alone surviving, re-merge in and being as they were before, one with the mother source." So this is one of the more beautiful poetic analogies in the secret doctrine. The moon, or queen of the night, the mother source, the moon beams are the enduring rays of that source, the eternal spiritual egos or monads, at least in this metaphor. The ocean and running waters are Maya, the turbulent temporal world of illusion and physical incarnation. The sparks in dancing reflections are our evanescent personalities, those temporary flashing illusions that only exist when the spirit reflects upon matter. And finally, the night is the Manvantara, the cycle of cosmic manifestation. So we then took a look at verse 4 itself, which states, "It is the root that never dies, the three-tongued flame," hang on a sec, there we go, "three-tongued flame of the four wicks." The wicks are the sparks that draw from the three-tongued flame, their upper triad, shot out by the seven, their flame. The beams and sparks of one moon reflected in the running waves of the rivers of Earth. Then she gives two additional names for Earth, Bhumi or Prithivi. So this verse outlines the esoteric anatomy of the human constitution, contrasting the eternal spirit with the temporary personality, as we saw in this description here, right? So the three-tongued flame represents the spiritual triad. This isn't too hard to understand. The four wicks symbolize the lower quaternary, which draw their temporary vitality from this higher triad as a whole. The verse illustrates how the monad projects its light to sustain the illusion of the lower self during physical incarnation. So next we took a look at HPB's commentary on the A section of verse 5, which states, the verse itself, "The spark hangs from the flame by the finest thread of Fohat. It journeys through the seven worlds of Maya." So the seven worlds of Maya are the seven globes of a chain, shown here repeated in each of seven rounds. The finest thread of Fohat forms the unbroken connection between the monad on its own plane and that monadic emanation as it passes outward and downward through the six systemic planes to finally anchor itself in the heart of an incarnated human being. It is a threat of Fohat because only Fohat has the necessary penetrating voltage to repeatedly pass through the vibrational barriers that separate each plane. The thread is actually a concentrated, tightly spiraled conduit of Fohatic energy. It acts as the insulated wire that carries the electric fire of the monad straight down into the physical etheric heart of a person. We then considered why science is unable to embrace the non-physical nature of life, which the poet Percy Shelley describes as life, like a dome of many colored glass, stains the white radiance of eternity. Next, HPB asks, what is that spark which hangs from the flame? It is Jiva, the monad in conjunction with Manas, or rather its aroma, that which remains from each personality when worthy and hangs from Atmabuddhi, the flame, by the thread of life. So here the flame is the monad. The hanging is produced by the triple thread of Fohat, as just discussed. And the Jiva, which HPB defines as the monad in conjunction with Manas, is the individualized soul. The aroma is the extracted essence of those experiences, the synthesized wisdom, the developed love, and the forged spiritual will drawn from the friction of each physical lifetime, which are stored in the permanent atoms. When Worthy references those moments of selfless sacrifice, love, and group consciousness, which are light enough to be drawn upward into the causal body. HPB then tells us that the doctrine of the soul is supported by all the ancient religions, from the Vedic to the Egyptian, from the Zoroastrian to the Jewish, then immediately describes how ancient Egyptian philosophy supported this septenary doctrine. As further proof of the ubiquity of the doctrine on the sevenfold principles of man, HPB again brings forward the Kabbalistic tree of life, noting that the supernal triad sits above the abyss, just as does the spiritual triad of theosophy, and that the divine septenary, or the seven lower sephira, from Chesed down to Malkut, or Kesed, which hang from the triad. We then learned that the three binaries make up the horizontal pairs found on the left and right pillars, the supernal binary, Kokhba Bina, the eternal binary, Kesed Gebura, and the formative binary, Netzach Hod, and that the four unities make up the middle pillar of equilibrium, Kether, the crown, Tifereth, the heart, or beauty, Yesod, the foundation, the etheric, and Malkuth, the kingdom of physical earth. So, you know, we had somewhat of a discussion about this. So if you're interested, you can go back to SD 101, which is recorded on Makara.us. By the way, Makara has become a much superior form for revisiting these webinars because they have synthesized notes as well as a real easy interface to find these. So I would recommend Makara.us over the YouTube. They exist on YouTube. You can find them, but there's no notes, and you have to be able to Google just the exact webinar that you want. You can't really browse them. Finally, we took a look at an old commentary quote. When I framed Adam Kadmon, the Elohim are made to say, the spirit of the eternal shot out of his body like a sheet of lightning that radiated at once on the billows of the 7 millions of skies, and my 10 splendors were his limbs. Very briefly, the sheet of lightning symbolizes the initial descent of divine energy shooting down the tree of life to animate the cosmos. The billows of the 7 million skies symbolize fragmentation into the 7 rays. The 10 splendors, acting as his limbs, are the 10 sephiroths, representing the divine emanations that structurally organize the primordial body. Taken together, this old commentary describes how the unmanifested eternal steps down its limitless voltage to build the objective universe as a single integrated living entity. And that pretty much takes us up to where we left off last time. Any thoughts or questions so far? Okay. Oh, thank you, BL, for putting that link in. That's useful. You might want to copy down that link, even if you don't at this time want to go back and look, because in future you may want to check
out. I'll send it out again tomorrow. It'll go out, and this has been posted to Makara email that I send out the day after the webinars. So
great, great. That's perfect. Thank you. Okay, so yeah, I encourage you for the rest of the webinar to, ask questions and make comments on anything in the webinar. The only thing I ask is that you keep it relevant to what we're talking about. Okay, during this session, we'll continue with HPB's commentary on this first section of verse 5. So could we get a reader, please?
Yes, Ariane, can you read that for us, please?
Yes. In the beginning of time, after the Elohim, the sons of light and life, or the builders, had shaped out of the eternal essence the heavens and the earth, they formed the worlds 6 by 6, the seventh being Malkuth, which is our earth. See Manchuan Codex on its plane, and the lowest on all the other planes of conscious existence. The Chaldean Book of Numbers contains a detailed explanation of all this. The first triad of the body of Adam Kadmon, the 3 upper planes of the 7, and there's a footnote, the formation of the living soul or man would render the idea more clearly. A living soul is a synonym of man in the Bible. These are our 7 principles. And back to the text, the first triad of the body of Adam Kadmon cannot be seen before the soul stands in the presence of the Ancient of Days. The sephiroth of this upper triad are Kether, the crown, represented by the brow of Macroprosopos, two.
That's Macroprosopos.
Oh, Macroprosopos.
It means the large face.
Two, Chauchma, wisdom, a male principle, by his right shoulder. And three, Bina, intelligence, a female principle, by the left shoulder. Then comes the 7 limbs, or sephiroth, on the planes of manifestation, the totality of these 4 planes being represented by the Microprosopus, the lesser face, or Tetragrammaton, the four-lettered mystery. The seven manifested and the three concealed limbs are the body of the deity.
Thank you, Ariane. So if you're wondering what the Red Virgin is, there's a great note in the chat from Ben who describes it very well. Okay, so first we have, in the beginning of time, after the Elohim, the sons of light and life, or the builders, had shaped out of the eternal essence, the heavens and the earth, they formed the worlds six by six, the seventh being Malkuth, which is our earth. See Mantuan Codex on its plane, and the lowest on all the other planes of conscious existence. The Chaldean Book of Numbers contains a detailed explanation of this. So first, quote, they formed the world six by six, is worded to emphasize the causative globes A through A, B, and C, and E, F, and G, with the fourth globe, D, globe D, Malkuth, being a product or final precipitation of these other six. That's the way it's worded. Our earth plane references the, our earth plane references the plane of the earthy element, which globe D alone inhabits. Out of all the seven, only globe D is in this dense earthy plane. The Mantuan Codex is a late 15th century collection of esoteric and astrological texts, notable for its early manuscript copies of key works like the Picatrix, as well as influential Hermetic writings. HBB considered the Chaldean Book of Numbers to be the true, uncorrupted, and occultly hidden source from which the later Jewish Kabbalah was derived. Exoteric scholars classify this work as either entirely lost to antiquity or a fiction, right? However, within the framework of the ageless wisdom, the text is believed to exist as a physical document, but it has been withdrawn from the public, so can only be read by clairvoyants like HPB, which she clearly does. In fact, there's every once in a while we get a reference to the Chaldean Book of the Numbers. And, you know, the fact that she says contains a detailed explanation of all this suggests firsthand knowledge of that fact. But you're not going to find it in the library. Okay, next, the first triad of the body of Adam Kadmon, the three upper planes of the seven, cannot be seen before the soul stands in the presence of the Ancient of Days. The Sephiroth of this upper triad are Kether, Keter, the crown, represented by the brow of Macroprosopus, two, Kokhma, wisdom, a male principle, by his right shoulder, and three, Bina, intelligence, a female principle, by the left shoulder. So the first triad is Atmabuddhimanas. The body of Adam Kadmon is the cosmic physical plane. Before the soul stands in the presence references the third initiation, where for the first time one stands before the Ancient of Days, who is Sanat Kumara. HPB then relates Keter to the brow of Macroprosopus. In Zoharic texts, the skull of Macroprosopus contains a quote hidden brain representing the unmanifested absolute. This brain is entirely sealed off from the lower creation. The brow of Macroprosopas, called the Metsacharatzon, or the brow of favor, is the threshold where the unmanifested will first strikes the boundary of manifestation. As such, it is the aperture through which pure electric fire is projected into the solar system, and thereby getting the whole ball rolling. The footnote, referenced by the phrase, the three upper planes of the seven, states, the formation of the living soul or man would render the idea more clearly. A living soul is a synonym of man in the Bible. These are our seven principles. So HPB may be here hinting at the theological misinterpretation of Genesis 2:7, where dust or matter is combined with the breath of life, spirit, resulting in man becoming a quote unquote living soul. Orthodox theology treats the soul as a singular immortal ghost, temporarily trapped inside a physical shell, whereas esotericists recognize that the true living soul is formed when the soul on its own plane infuses, then directs the lower principles. Any thoughts or questions so far? Okay.
Well, we did have a question. Ariane wanted to know which secret doctrine episodes devoted to the Tree of Life, because 101 is not listed. Well, it is listed on Makaro, but it's just the general explanation, because I'm sorry, I haven't been able to do the synopses for the secret doctrine webinars.
Yeah, this is a kind of a new thing that we've only recently decided to do. So, yeah.
I will say we had volunteers who did the ones that we have. There's a significant number of them that do have synopses in there, and volunteers did that for us. So,
yeah, one of the things you can do is download the. Wait a minute. Are the PDFs of the images
yes.
available?
Exactly, they are, and that's what I recommended, is that you download the PDFs and then you can scan them. You can search in PDF.
Yeah, you could just very quickly flip through the PDFs of a given secret doctrine webinar, and if you see the Tree of Life, and it appears often, you know, she continuously references it. You know, there's this It's scattered all throughout the secret doctrine. You know, when Blavatsky wrote the secret doctrine, there's a story that she wrote in longhand, you know, and then cut little pieces from her longhand documents and literally just pasted them in different places. You know, I mean, she would have really appreciated a modern computer, let's put it that way. But then she just threw the page off of her table onto the floor. And she did not even just stack them in order. So it wasn't until after her death that somebody had to come in and try to figure out which pages belonged in order, right? And whereas sometimes it was obvious, other times not so much. So I know Alice Bailey was really confounded when she started to read the secret doctrine, saying it was so difficult to try to figure out, you know, why is she now going to this part? Because she already covered that. And we've run into that too, you know. So for that reason, you know, if you want like one continuous document on the Tree of Life, for instance, you're not going to find it in the Secret Doctrine. You have to go back through, you know, gosh, 20, the last 20 webinars would give you probably the bulk of the references, but maybe not even all of them. It's just the way she wrote. We have to deal with that. Okay. So again, I welcome questions and comments. Next.
What language was she writing in?
English. She lived in London when she wrote the book.
Francis?
Yeah.
I would also like to suggest that you can actually get the Secret Doctrine in a PDF version. And then within that PDF, you can search for the term, the Tree of Life, and you could make your own little compilation of
that's right.
That way.
That's right. Very good. Yeah, I have it. I'd be glad to put it in the chat. It's easy to find, though. You know, if you do a search, The Secret Doctrine by H.P. Blavatsky, PDF, you will get, I think it's the Theosophical Society that makes it easy peasy to download. And also you can just have it online. I keep, the version I use all the time is just online. It's just part of my list of theosophical documents that I continuously access. So it's just a web page. Anyway, moving on. Then come the seven limbs or Sephiroth on the planes of manifestation. So first come the three, which are the three principles akin to the three logoi that are an extension of the solar logos, right? The logo of will, of love, and of active intelligence. Then come the seven limbs on the planes of manifestation, the totality of these four planes being represented by the micro prosopas, the lesser face, as opposed to the macro prosopas, the greater face, right? Or tetragrammaton, the four-lettered mystery. The seven manifested and the three concealed limbs are the body of the deity. So first, then comes the seven limbs or Sephiroth on the planes of manifestation. These are the active agents of the lower quaternary, composed of the unconditioned energy of the concealed triad, steps down and distributed into seven distinct channels. The tetragrammaton, yod he vav he, read from right to left, or four-lettered mystery, represents the binding together of four distinct principles to create a stable form. Each of the four letters corresponds to one of the four lower planes. A human being only operates as a fully integrated, quote unquote, lesser face when the physical, emotional, lower, and higher, that's the key one, higher mental vehicles are perfectly aligned and synthesized by the soul. Finally, the seven manifested and the three concealed limbs are the body of the deity, cites the final equation of the cosmic physical plane, 7 + 3 = 10. Okay, thoughts or questions? Let's see what we have in the chat. Yes, Ben says, fourth stage, four letters, tetragrammaton, first letter is yod, the smaller letter, said to contain all the letters of the Aleph Beit, as the four noble truths contain all noble and wholesome qualities. Fourth round, fourth globe, etc. Yes, the four is very much the number that is up front, and therefore the tetragrammaton, which literally means fourfold. Okay.
And then Michelle dropped a PDF on the Tree Paths quick reference guide. So anybody who wants that can download it. And I put a link in there for a PDF of the Secret Doctrine.
Awesome, Bill. Thank you. Yeah, go ahead and click on that, you know. And go ahead and download it. It'd be useful. Okay. Next up, could we get a reader, please?
Yes. Martha, can you read that for us, please?
Yes, I can.
Thanks.
Thus, our earth, Malkuth, is both the seventh and the fourth world, the former when counting from the first globe above, the latter, if reckoned by the planes. It is generated by the sixth globe of Sephiroth, called Yesod, foundation, or as said in the Book of Numbers, by Yesod, he fecundates the primitive Heva, Eve of our earth. Rendered in mystic language, this is the explanation why Malkuth, called the inferior mother, Matrona, queen, and the kingdom of the foundation, is shown as the bride of Tetragrammaton, or Microprosopis, the second logos, the heavenly man. When free from all impurity, the will becomes, when free from all impurity, she will become united with the spiritual logos, that is, in the seventh race of the seventh round, after the regeneration on the day of Sabbath. For the seventh day has again an occult significance undreamt of by our theologians. Quote, when Matronitha, the mother, is separated and brought face to face with the king in the excellence of the Sabbath, all things become one body, says verse 746 in chapter 12 of Ha'idra Zuta Kadisha.
Okay, not that it matters, but it's chapter 22. Okay, first,
thank you.
Thus our earth, Malkuth, is both the seventh and the fourth world. The former when counting from the first globe above, the latter if reckoned by the planes. It is generated by the sixth globe, or Sephiroth, called Yesod, foundation. Or as said in the Book of Numbers, by Yesod, he, Adam Kadmon, fecundates the primitive Heva, or Heva, Eve, or our earth. So the earth is the seventh systemic plane of the cosmic physical. It's on the seventh systemic plane of the cosmic physical plane. The seventh sephira of the Macroprosopis, and the fourth globe in a chain of seven globes. Let me show that again. It's on the seventh plane. It's earthy, so it's on the dense physical. It's the seventh Sephiroth, called Malkuth, and it is the fourth globe in order of manifestation. That's why you had the four and the seven. Yesod is the sixth of the formative worlds. In human and planetary constitution, Yesod corresponds to the Linga Sharira, the etheric double or vital body. It is called the foundation because dense physical matter is not a principle, meaning that it cannot hold its shape without an underlying etheric grid to support it. Next, by Yesod, he, Adam Kadmon, fecundates, represents the transmission of a dual electrical circuit. Through Yesod, vitality is distributed as prana to fecundate the dense physical body with biological life. Simultaneously, Yesod acts as a neurological switchboard, routing the qualitative energies of the mental and astral planes through the etheric chakras to interface directly with the human glandular and nervous systems. So, yes, so it is really the formative foundation of physical reality. The primitive Heva, Eve, or our Earth, is the mother of form. Heva, or Eve, translates to mother of all thing, of all, sorry, mother of all living. But esoterically, she represents Malkuth, which is Earth, Globe D. She is the passive, dense physical matter that receives the vitalizing blueprint from Yesod. Next, rendered in mystic language, this is the explanation why Malkuth, called the inferior mother, Matrona, queen, and the kingdom of the foundation, is shown as the bride, a tetragrammaton, or the microprosopos, the second logos, the heavenly man. Matrona is Malkuth, our dense physical earth. There are actually two mothers. The superior mother, Bina, is the root source of all cosmic matter. She is the abstract, unmanifested potential of form. The inferior mother, Maltrona, or Malkuth, is the dense physical precipitation of that matter. She's only called inferior as a geographic designation, being the lowest operational pole of the planetary system. Matrona becomes the bride of Tetragrammaton when the physical plane is purified and aligned with the microprosopos, thereby becoming the living embodiment of the subjective divine will. So it's not, you could say it's not, she is not at this time. Malkuth is not at this time. Mother Earth is not at this time the bride of Tetragrammaton, but is preparing for that wedding when the when Earth takes the fifth initiation, becomes a sacred planet, that marriage will take place. It means that spirit will have penetrated all the way down into physical substance. Any thoughts or questions? Let's see what the chat brings up.
Yeah, I was just going to tell you. Ben says the yod drips all through the tarot.
Yeah.
Cognate of tongues of fire of Pentecost.
Yeah, thank you, Ben. Yeah, you'll notice once you recognize the yod, you'll see it everywhere in the tarot. And it represents the spirit aspect. Right, so it's not that difficult to. Well, let's just put it this way. It helps in just a quick interpretation of a card just to see that yod symbol and where it's placed. You know, for instance, it forms the headgear of the ninth card, the ninth major arcana, the ninth arcanum. Which represents Virgo. It is called the Hermit. And it's literally the shape of the hat that the Hermit is wearing, basically showing that his consciousness is one with spirit. Okay, next up.
I'd also like to say it's a formation I find consistently within natal charts.
Oh, well, that's a right. The yod as an astrological configuration, also called the finger of God. Talk about that just a bit, BL.
Okay, what it is it's two in conjunct. There's an apex planet that is in conjunct two other planets who themselves are sextile. Okay, so it's 150 degrees from the apex for those two planets, and those two planets are 60 degrees apart. The 60 degree apart, the sextile, is a friendly relationship, and they have something in common. One's air, one's fire, or one's water and earth. So they have something in common, all right? The inconjunct from the apex, it has absolutely nothing in common at all with those two inconjunct planets. And what the purpose of it is in a chart is for that person to learn to forge this quirky relationship with those planets, and it happens all the time. I don't know how many of you ever saw the movie Benny and June, or the one where the young kid with the octogenarian lady, Ruth and somebody. But that's it. It's the you see somebody on the street, you have absolutely nothing in common, but you forge some kind of an affinity with them. And that's the beauty of this yod. And the sextile helps you do that. Okay. So that's the beauty of this yod, is that it breaks you out of those other patterns and put things in a totally new way. It is the finger of God, the finger of fate. And that's because you can use those quirky relationships in very, very unusual ways within your chart. There's also a golden yod, which is made up of the pentagram, you know, the 72 degree and 144. So it's very similar. It looks almost identical in the chart, but it's much more friendly aspects that are part of the five-pointed star. So anyway,
so this in this chart you see Uranus and Venus are forming an conjunct, and then you see Saturn and Venus forming an conjunct. So this figure is a yod, or a finger of God.
Right. Venus is the apex of it. They're in Capricorn. And she's forging these unusual relationships with Uranus and with Saturn there. So
that's what they look like. Yeah.
That's what they look like.
Form this symmetrical pattern, you know, which an inconjunct by itself is anything but symmetrical. But when you have them together like this, you have this interesting pattern. Anyway. Okay. So yeah, it would be interesting to see if there's any connection between the yod of the Hebrew letter, except for in terms of shape. I suppose that's why they call it that. No, that's not why they call it that. It's because it's the finger of God, which is that spirit aspect of the yod, which is coming in. Anyway, next.
And that.
Go ahead.
Michelle adds that the chart I attached, the one she gave us, the PDF earlier, provides extensive information about the tarot as it relates to the paths that connect to the Sephiroth in the tree. Meditating on the symbolic meaning of the tarot that represents each path is a tool to integrate the principles of the tree of life that exists within all of us.
Right, you can pretty quickly find a tree of life that shows the tarot cards in the pathways. If you just Google tree of life and tarot together, it'll pull up one of those charts. And you can see which tarot are relevant to which of the paths between the Sephiroth, which is that's a whole study in itself. Alrighty, next up. When free from all impurity, she will become united with the spiritual logos. We're talking about the bride of Tetragrammaton, which is Malkuth. That is in the seventh race of the seventh round, after the regeneration of the day of Sabbath. But the seventh day has again an occult significance undreamt of by our theologian. Well, that's for sure. So every subplane of the planetary body must be cleared of friction so that it acts as a transparent conductor for the divine will, which will finally take place during the last root race of the last globe of the last round of the last chain. Is really literally trillions of years. This great era of purified alignment is the true esoteric Sabbath. TK calls it the day be with us when spirit and matter become one. Are the divine marriage. Then finally, we have when Matronitha, that's the mother, is separated and brought face to face with the king in the excellence of the Sabbath. All things become one body, says verse 746 in chapter 22 of Ha Idra Zuta Kadisha. So Idra Zuta Kadisha, meaning the lesser holy assembly, is a section of the Zohar. Verse 746 deals exclusively with the final synthesis of the Sephiroth. When Matronitha, the mother, is separated, refers to planetary involution. Matronitha is another name for Matrona, Malkuth, and Globe D, which must be separated from the subjective higher realms during the involutionary arc. This isolation forces matter to crystallize, develop density, and provides the necessary friction for individualization to occur. And brought face to face with the king is a metaphor for the alignment that takes place during the final stages of the planetary life cycle. You could say that when Earth becomes a sacred planet and takes the fifth initiation, that the king and the queen will stand face to face, meaning spirit and matter will become aligned. And that is to be distinguished from that final Sabbath, the very, very, very end, which is actually the a synthesis of spirit and matter rather than an alignment. That's the difference. First, they're aligned, and then work in alignment for eons and before being finally synthesized. In Kabbalism, the king is Zeir Anpin, the Micropsophos or Tetragrammaton. While Matronitha is separated, she is described as being back to back with the king, meaning the physical plane operates blindly, unable to see or register the subjective blueprint. When evolution purifies the physical vehicle, Matronitha rotates to become face to face with the soul aspect. In the excellence of the Sabbath, all things become one body. That's the last three words are the important ones there. This is synthetic, not alignment. The excellence of the Sabbath, this is seventh race of the seventh round. Once the physical plane is perfectly aligned to reflect the king or soul, the illusion of duality collapses and the long evolutionary war between spirit and matter ends. Okay, next up, could we get a reader, please?
Yes. Let me see who. Michelle, can you read that for us, please? Michelle?
Yes.
Can you read that, please?
Becomes one body means that all is reabsorbed once more into one element. The spirits of men becoming nirvanis and the elements of everything else becoming again what they were before. Protyle, or undifferentiated substance, Sabbath, means rest or nirvana. It is not the seventh day after 6 days, but a period of duration of which equals that of the 7 days, or any period made up of the seven parts. Thus, a pralaya is equal in duration to the manvantara, or a night of Brahma is equal to this day. If the Christians will follow Jewish customs, they ought to adopt the spirit and not the dead letter thereof, to work 1 week of 7 days and rest 7 days. That the word Sabbath had a mystic significance is shown in the contempt shown by Jesus for the Sabbath day, and by what is said in Luke 18:12. Sabbath is there taken for the whole week. See Greek texts where the week is called Sabbath. I fast twice in the Sabbath. Paul, an initiate, knew it well when referring to the eternal rest and felicity in heaven as Sabbath, and their happiness will be eternal, for they will ever be one with the Lord and will enjoy an eternal Sabbath. Hebrew 4:2.
Thank you, Michelle. Okay, first, becomes one body means that all is reabsorbed once more into the one element, the spirits of men becoming nirvanis, and the elements of everything else becoming again what they were before, protyle or undifferentiated substance. Sabbath means rest or nirvana. Okay, at the end of the seventh round, as I said before, the central sun acts as a massive vacuum, withdrawing the life force back up the tree of life, absorbing the many back into the one. As to the spirits of men becoming nirvanis, a nirvani is a fully perfected monad. In terms of the tree of life, humanity returns to Kether, but with the now awakened consciousness gained by passing through the lower worlds, and the elements of everything else becoming again what they were before, protyle or undifferentiated substance. Well, while the spirit enters nirvana, the physical architecture of the solar system becomes completely dissolved. Protyle is a 19th century term for the hypothetical baseline of the matter of the universe. Esoterically, it's mula prakriti or root matter. The Sabbath is pralaya, the period between incarnations of the planetary logos, or between lesser cycles, between rounds, between chains. All of these have a greater or lesser period of pralaya, and all are Sabbath because they are spirit infused. It's the time when the lesser countenance and the vast countenance are no longer differentiated. The solar system rests in a state of formless potential, waiting for the dawn of the next solarlogoic life cycle, when the lightning of Phohat will again strike, and the Elohim will again begin to build the worlds. Next, it is not the seventh day after 6 days, but a period, the duration of which equals that of the seven quote unquote days, or any period made up of seven parts. Thus, a pralaya is equal in duration to the Manvantara, or a night of Brahma is equal to this day. So Orthodox theology presents a ratio of six parts work to one part rest, but in fact, the sect, 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 the sect.
We lost you, Francis. You echoed, or was that just me?
Boing.
Yeah, okay. Well, let's give him a minute to come back. Francis, we lost you. Are you back yet?
Working on it, working on it. Testing, 1, 2. Yeah.
Okay.
Once in a while, my mic just, you know, it gets tired. It has to take a break. So about every 3 webinars, it seems like. Okay, I think I was, where was I? I was talking about the...
You were talking about the 7 days of rest, but it didn't have to be that whole week.
Right, exactly. Right. Yeah, so the important thing is where exoterically it's a 6-to-1 ratio. Esoterically, it's a 1-to-1 ratio. The Sabbath exactly mirrors the period of activity. Here's where it was. Just as a period of inhalation is the same as that of an exhalation. That's not so much our breath as the logoic breath who breathes out and existence comes into being. And then as on the evolutionary cycle, breathes in and the all is drawn back into the spirit aspect, those two being equal periods. The two cycles are called the day and night of Brahma. Next, the word Sabbath had a mystic significance. Is that right? It doesn't matter. Is shown, yeah, okay. Here we go. Sorry. That the word Sabbath had a mystic significance is shown in the contempt shown by Jesus for the Sabbath day and by what is said in Luke 18:12. Sabbath is there taken for the whole week. See Greek text where the week is called Sabbath. I fast twice in the Sabbath. So through his healing work, Jesus demonstrated the supremacy of spiritual law over physical dogma by not conforming to exoteric calendars of the time. In Luke 18:12, the Pharisee boasts, I fast twice in the week. In the original Greek text, the word translated as week is sabbaton, meaning Sabbath. Next, Paul, an initiate, knew it well when referring to the eternal rest and felicity in heaven as Sabbath, and their happiness will be eternal, for they will ever be one with the Lord and will enjoy an eternal Sabbath. So this is probably at least one time in the Bible when Sabbath is correctly described. Will ever be one with the Lord refers to the return of the indwelling Jiva to the monad, which is one with the solar logos. And again, an eternal Sabbath is pralaya. In the blue books, DK refers to Paul the initiate 143 times. Clearly an important initiate. Could we get a reader for this description from Esoteric Astrology? You guys don't get a chance to read quotes from the books that often. So a reader, please.
Oops, sorry. Marguerite, can you read that for us, please? Okay, I don't see her unmuting. Renee, can you read that for us, please?
I'm here.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Marguerite.
Go
I
ahead.
couldn't unmute. I'm sorry. Okay.
No problem.
Throughout the teaching of Christian theology, the theme of blood runs ceaselessly, and the source of salvation is laid upon the blood relationship and not upon the life aspect, which the blood veils and symbolizes. It is the creed of a crucified and dead Christ which rules Christianity and not that of the risen Master. One of the reasons for this travesty of the truth has been that St. Paul, that great initiate, prior to taking the third initiation, which he did at the time, he was functioning as related in the Acts of the Apostles, was potently under Martian influence, and was born in Scorpio. A study of his horoscope would demonstrate this. Were you in a position to study, as can we who are connected with the hierarchy? It was he who gave the Scorpio Mars slant to the interpretation and exposition of the Christian teaching and deflected its energy into channels of teaching which its founder had never intended. Such is often the undesirable effect of the activities of well-meaning disciples upon the work which they undertake to carry on after the originator of some work for the hierarchy passes over to the other side through death or relinquishes his task in order to take up another, excuse me, to take up other duties.
Thank you, Marguerite. Okay. Next up, could we get a reader, please?
Yes. Renee, can you read that for us, please? Okay, she's not unmuting. Tom, can you read it for us, please?
Can you make it larger? The print is so small.
I'm sorry, I can't make it larger. Are you on a phone or a small, very small
No,
computer?
I'm on a computer. I mean a desktop.
Let me see here. I can hang on a sec. Who said we can't?
Takes up pretty much my whole screen.
But I can make it a bit larger. Let's see here. It's going to take a second though. Get over here to format. You can bump the text up. I've never done this for anybody. You should feel very okay. Let's see how I get about as big as I can make it and still keep it on the screen. Now I'll go back out and hit play.
That's very much better.
Does that help? Wait a minute.
Very much so, yes.
Hang on, let me readjust the window for it. I don't know why that changed. Oh gosh. All right, hang on a sec. You know, these windows are so cantankerous. They don't readjust very easily at all. There we go. Okay, go ahead.
Thank you.
All right, Jane, go ahead.
You want me to read it?
Well, whoever was going to read.
The difference between the two systems, taking the Kabbalah as contained in the Chaldean Book of Numbers, not as misrepresented by its now disfigured copy, the Kabbalah of the Christian mystics, the Kabbalah and the archaic esoteric Vidya is very small indeed, being confined to unimportant divergences of form and expression.
Wait a minute here. It jumped. Oh boy. This is a bit of a disaster. Let's see here. This is what I actually wanted to read. Oh God. All right. Sorry, I can't do any more with this. I thought I could make this work better, but I can't really. So you read down to, let's see where, to expression. Okay. So, somebody who can see the screen better, start with thus Eastern occultism refers to our earth.
Thus, Eastern occultism refers to our earth as the fourth world, the lowest of the chain, above which run upward on both its sides the six globes, three on each side. The Zohar, on the other hand, calls the earth the lower or the seventh, adding that upon the six depend all things which are in it. Microprosopis, I can't, how do you pronounce that?
Microprosopis, yeah.
Microprosopis. The smaller face, smaller because manifested and finite, is formed of six sephiroth, say the same work. Seven kings come and die in the thrice destroyed world, Malkuth, our earth. Destroyed after each of the three rounds which it has gone through. And their reign of the seven kings will be broken up. Book of Numbers 1, 8, 3. This relates to the seven races, five of which have already appeared, and two more have still to appear in this round.
Okay, thank you, Jane. So, first, let's see. First, I want to just bring this back. There we go. All right. The difference between the two systems. Hang on. Almost there. There we go. Taking the Kabbalah as contained in the Chaldean Book of Numbers, not as misrepresented by its now disfigured copy, the Kabbalah of the Christian mystics, the Kabbalah and the archaic esoteric Vidya is very small indeed. So the difference between the two systems is very small indeed. When you use the right Kabbalah, being confined to unimportant divergences or forms and expressions. So the archaic esoteric Vidya, which just means knowledge, represents the Eastern transmission of the ageless wisdom, which HPB here equates with the genuine Western Kabbalah. Different terminology, but the same underlying structure. HPB then gives us an example of this similarity. Thus, Eastern occultism refers to our earth as the fourth world, the lowest of the chain, above which run upward on both its sides, the six globes, three on each side. The Zohar, on the other hand, calls the earth the lower or the seventh, adding that upon the six depends all things which are in it, microprosopis. As we know, the Eastern occultism charts, they chart planetary evolution as a V-shaped cycle of involution and evolution, whereas the Kabbalistic system charts the exact same sequence, but rather than drawing a U-shaped arc, it draws a straight vertical line of descending density. But whether you call the Earth the fourth globe at the bottom of a U curve or the seventh sphere at the bottom of a vertical line, the structural reality is the same. Earth is a single dense physical precipitation of six subtle subjective blueprints in both systems, right? In both cases, the six are the formative globes and planes of the microprosopis. Next, the smaller face, smaller because manifested and finite, is formed of six sephiroth, says the same work. Seven kings come and die in the thrice destroyed world. Malkuth, our earth, destroyed after each of the three rounds which it has gone through. Okay, so the seven kings that come and die represent the seven root races, each of which must die fade into obscuration when their evolutionary mandate is complete, making way for the next. The earth isn't actually destroyed after each round. It goes into obscuration. However, the planetary life force is completely withdrawn. Without its vitalizing prana, the physical matter loses its formative cohesion. While the absolute root matter remains suspended, every objective structure is dissolved back into its elemental origins. And finally, and their reign of the seven kings will be broken up. Book of Numbers 1:8 and 3, chapters 1, verse 8, and chapter 3. This relates to the seven races, five of which have already appeared, and two more have still to appear in this round. Okay, each king or root race is a specialized vehicle designed by the Elohim to develop a particular aspect of human consciousness. Once a root race has extracted the required consciousness, its biological and geographic forms lose their cohesion. Civilizations expressing the purpose of that root race, such as Lemuria or Atlantis, are then dismantled, thereby allowing monads to incarnate into the next root race. Okay? Any thoughts or questions about this? Alrighty then. Next up, the reader, please.
Irina, can you read that for us, please?
The Shinto allegorical accounts of cosmogony and the origin of man in Japan hint at the same belief. Captain Foundas studied for nearly 9 years in the monasteries of Japan, the religion underlying the various secrets of the land, the Shinto idea of creation, he says, is as follows. Out of chaos, Konton, the earth, in, was the sediment precipitated, and the heavens, yo, the ethereal essence which ascended, ma, jin, appeared between the two. The first man was called Kunitoko Tachi no Mikoto, and five other names were given to him. And then the human race appeared, male and female. Izanagi and Izanami begat Tenshoku Dojin, the first of the five gods of the earth. These gods are simply our five races. Izanagi and Izanami, being the two kinds of the ancestors, the two preceding races, which give birth to animal and to rational man. It will be shown, volume 2, part 2, that the number 7, as well as the doctrine of the septenary constitution of man, was preeminent in all the secret systems. It plays as important a part in Western Kabbalah and in Eastern occultism. Eliphas Levi calls the number 7 the key to the Mosaic creation and the symbol of every religion.
Thank you, Irene.
Thank you.
Okay, first, the Shinto allegorical accounts of cosmogony and the origin of men in Japan hint at the same belief. So, you know, this is HPB's specialty, right? She takes a concept which we identify as a theosophical concept and then shows how it occurs in different cultures, right? So we've moved, you know, from the Jewish to the Egyptian through the Kabbalic, and now we're looking at the Shinto version of these same belief systems. Okay. Captain C. Foundus studied for nearly 9 years in the monasteries of Japan. The religion underlying the various sects of the land. So here's Captain Foundus, great looking photo. Mm-hmm. Just as Christian mystics disfigure the Kabbalah with emotional theology, the outer sects of Shintoism devolved into exoteric ritual, local animism, and state-sponsored dogma. To find the esoteric truth of the system, Captain Foundus spent almost a decade in Shinto monasteries. Next, the Shinto idea of creation, he says, is as follows. Out of the chaos, konton, the earth, in, was the sediment precipitated, and the heavens, yo, the ethereal essences which ascended, ma, jin, appeared between the two. The first man was called Kunitokotachi no Mikoto, and five other names were given to him. And then the human race appeared, male and female. So HPB continues to establish the universality of the ageless wisdom. In the esoteric Shinto tradition, creation begins with invisible, ethereal, heavenly deities, the Koto Amatsukami, who eventually generate the material world and the physical bodies of humanity through a process of condensation. This is the same structural blueprint as the Kabbalistic Sephiroth precipitating into Malkuth, or the Vedic system of the monad stepping down through the mental and astral planes. Konton is Mula Prakriti, the undifferentiated root matter before the active will organizes it into geometric form. The precipitated sediment, Earth's Malkuth, is the densest material, which stands at the bottom of the evolutionary arc. As matter sinks, the high frequency ethereal essences rise. This establishes the basic differential between spirit and matter. Ma, jin, appeared between the two, refers to the human kingdom as the midpoint between heaven and earth, thus defining humanity as the antikorana between the lower and higher kingdoms in nature. The phrase, the first man was called Kunitokotachi no Mikoto, and five other names were given to him, gives us the numerical cipher linking Japan to the Kabbalah, the sixfold entity making up the first man, plus his five other names, is the Shinto equivalent of the Microprosopis. The Zohar's smaller face formed of six Sephiroth. And then the human race appeared, male and female, marks the descent into the densest form in the middle of the third root race, of which the sixfold first man is the subjective blueprint. Okay, any thoughts or questions? It's, you know, it's always a little difficult when the teachings are shown from a whole other cultural perspective, because there's a lot of new terms involved, but the same ideas are actually being illustrated here. Yes, Irene.
I noticed that in the image of the Captain Foundus that you just showed us a few minutes ago,
yeah,
on the front of his forehead, that round object, I'm not sure what the Japanese name of it, but it definitely reminds me the cube on the top of the heads of the Jewish religion.
The yarmulke.
No, there is like that. It's little like a little hat, and there is a black cube on top of it, and this is for the religious, very religious, like high, post, Jewish. I would say them.
Like the high priest, you mean?
Yes, high priest, and this is not the. I don't know if there is any connection, but it's really reminds me that, and also, this is very interesting. It's actually very important. Well, I guess for everybody, but for me, it's touching really deep because I was in some martial art for 7 years, and it was Japanese martial art, and it's based on Shinto. And what interesting is that the masters of this art never ever talked about the ancient Shinto religion as is. And instead, it was colored in a dark references after the Second World War, that all these priests were really kind of like bloodthirsty people, and because of their religion. So this is a little bit of confusion. It's not, I am not going into religion. I just look at the
That's simple.
information and energy and symbols, yes. But interestingly, also, I don't know how to believe in that or not, but in spiritual communities, it is, there is, it is the concept that Sanat Kumara's, so to speak, vehicle once in a time immemorial landed on Earth, and it was in Japan, and there is also,
Oh,
yeah.
yeah, and
Did you hear
that's
about
reflect.
that? Can you comment on this?
Well, just that's reflected in their mythology. They talk about this, divine vehicle and the descent of this sacred one, but I had not put those two ideas together. That's very interesting.
But
There's
the
some.
name itself, Sanat Kumara, it is sound to me like not Sanskrit name. It sounds to me
No.
like Japanese
More
involvement.
Japanese. Now, I haven't heard anything about that. It's quite interesting. I'm glad you brought us back to this picture. It's the first time I've really studied it. Notice this very specific mudra here that he's, this isn't like just the way you hold your hand, right? This
Oh yeah,
is.
the mudras, we also in this martial art we actually used and studied mudras, and they are in evoking energies for these practices.
Right. Yeah, both hands actually. This extended little finger here—that's not just like a hand at rest. This is all very precise.
This hand gestures to me looks like that Tibetan would be holding their vajra.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, it would be fascinating, to know more about the connection between these. Let's
Did you
see.
have any books about this person, Captain Founders?
Oh
Maybe
no, I
like
don't.
names? No. Okay.
I don't know. Yeah, I Okay, I'm just looking at it. Ariane says persecution of those who dare to speak the truth, including now when protesters who stop bridge traffic are given 5 years of prison for highlighting climate catastrophe. How soft is this man's gaze? Yet soft, but quite intense. Ben says phylacteries. And right. So, yeah, I think, like so often happens, the esoteric tradition is
Francis, we lost you. If you can hear me.
Yeah, he's still got his screen up, so hopefully he can come right back.
Okay.
Testing 1, 2. There we go.
Yeah,
Okay,
you're back.
know it right away, but you just have to wait about that long, which is like 30 seconds. It's never happened twice that close together. So I don't know what's going on. But
the persecution of those who dare to speak the truth.
That's exactly right. Also, just the need to veil the esoteric aspects of all religions. You know, there are teachings in the higher levels of every spiritual discipline that are veiled from public knowledge. You know, certainly all the true esoteric religions. Not every offshoot of Christianity, and I don't know about Mohammedism, but certainly, you know, Buddhism and Shintoism and the Vedic teachings, the Trans-Himalayan wisdom, you know, of his Hinduism, the best aspects of Hinduism are all part of this. Anyway, we have to say goodbye because there's going to be in 3 minutes, there's going to be a new webinar series. Some of you are going to want to be on that. So, let's see, in terms of dates, we're at,
okay,
coming Friday.
The Treatise of Cosmic Fire, right, Friday.
Go ahead.
Light of the Soul on 2 August and The Secret Doctrine on 16 August. And all of those are our regular time, 7 p.m.
There we go. Okay. Thank you very much, all. Much love to you all. And I'll see you hopefully on Friday for Treatise on Cosmic Fire.
Thank you, everybody. Okay. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Thank you, Francis.
You're very